Thank you all for coming to our session on the research on the global tobacco epidemic. It's a very interesting and important topic, so we have some great presenters today. I'll ask that we hold all questions to the very end. So our first speaker is Dr. Judy Krueger. She's a senior scientist with the epidemiology branch of the Office on Smoking and Health with the CDC. And today she'll be talking to us about the prevalence of tobacco use and purchase patterns in 14 low and middle income countries. So thank you.
Just so I know, advancing is just up and down, correct?
Yep, or you could do back and forth like that.
Thank you. Okay. Great. Okay, well, to begin with, I have nothing to disclose from this study, but let me go over the fact that what we're presenting here, what I'm presenting here today, is an overview. I'd like to remind everybody, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with the tobacco arena, that's why you're here, but global tobacco consumption has increased over the past decade, and tobacco use is still one of the biggest non-communicable disease contributors and risk factors to illness and death. So using 14-country data, which covers about 54% of the population and 3.7 billion, we're able to examine the prevalence of use and purchase patterns. So I'm going to provide an overview, and this is my focus for today's presentation, to give you some background on the FCTC, the MPOWER overview of our survey, let you know how you can obtain data from this survey, provide a summary of our study findings and conclusions. So these two tools are really the gold standard to systematic monitoring of adult tobacco use and key tobacco control measures. The WHO FCTC was introduced in 2005. I think we have another speaker who may go into more detail on these, so I won't go into a lot about the history, but since it's been introduced, it's been one of the widest embraced treaties in the history of the United Nations. And in 2008, WHO introduced MPOWER package to assist countries with implementation of effective tobacco control measures. So the WHO FCTC provides a framework for countries to implement and manage tobacco control. The power of the FCTC lies not only in the content, but in the global momentum, those who have embraced it. MPOWER is a package that was created by WHO to assist countries in the implementation of effective tobacco control measures. And it's an acronym. So M stands for monitor, as you can see. P would be for protect. And so it helps then to for countries to adapt global tobacco control. And it corresponds to the provisions in the WHO FCTC. Going into the data surveillance system, what you see here are five different surveillance systems that we have available. And in a poster presentation the other day, we were sharing with the group that there is a database now called GTTS data, and it allows people, and I have at the end of this presentation, I'll have the link, where you can obtain all of these data sets, the data, the questions, and it's an interface so that you can actually look at the country that you're interested in and the measures. But briefly, what we have here is the Global Youth Tobacco Survey focusing on youth, the Global School Professional Survey focusing on administrators of schools, the Health Professional Student Survey, which is for health professional students like physicians, pharmacists, nurses, and dentists. Finally, the Global Adult Tobacco Survey, which is what I'm going to be presenting on, and the TQS, which is a new resource which we've just kicked off. And this is to allow folks to use a key set of questions ranging from 3 to 22 that allow you to look at the MPOWER strategy specifically. So data from all of these surveys can be used. We've got 172 countries that have used these surveys that can be used to help set priorities and targets for tobacco control and to measure the effectiveness of policies, and related interventions. So the purpose of GATT specifically is to collect data on tobacco use and key tobacco control measures, and to use a standardized way to that's been globally accepted, be able to utilize this data so that we can inform policy and programs. So a systematic procedure is used to make sure that the same questions are used in the same manner. Field investigators are trained to deliver the information. The sampling is, again, consistent, and we have manuals that can be used. They've all been translated in the language the country would use. And we have experts in the various countries who make sure that they've been back-translated correctly and are relevant, and also products that are used in those countries can be added. In terms of the methodology of the Global Adult Tobacco Survey, core questions are in the survey, and we have other optional questions. These would be specific to, let's say, other tobacco products. If a country would be interested in learning more about BDs, and I'll present a little bit of information about that, those types of questions would be in here. It's a face-to-face interview survey, and it has been translated into 40 languages and dialects, and over 400,000 trained interviewers have used these surveys to collect the data. We've got handheld devices so that the data can be entered in directly to reduce error, and so it also helps to implement and upload in a quicker manner so that we can post the data and make it available. In terms of the sampling, it is a nationally representative household survey. It's we call it the Global Adult Tobacco Survey, but it does start with sampled adults or individuals who are 15 years of age and older. The survey is repeated every 4 to 5 years so that we can look at progress. We use it's household, as I mentioned, household survey using face-to-face interview, and it's multi-stage in different clustered and offered at different times within a time frame within the year that it's being collected. If you want more information, there is a link that you can use right here to get into the GTSS data. And as I mentioned, this is an interface. It's new and allows you to have access to the data if you use SPSS, SAS, or STATA. The code is there. It allows you to look at indicators. I know it's hard to see, but in the far right, the terms are there. You can identify things in terms of the prevalence of variety of tobacco products. You can look at secondhand smoke measures. You can look at policy, economics. So all the items are there. Allows you to choose the country and the year that you're interested in, and it's a really nice resource. From this website, you can also get country fact sheets for all of the countries that are being presented today. Also, the country reports, the detailed reports for each of the country is available from this website. also to note, you know, there are other technical exchange information, and it's a great data bank for information for you to collect. So the purpose of our specific study was to use data from 2008 to 2010 from the Global Adult Tobacco Survey to look at the prevalence of use of tobacco products, including both smokeless and smoked cigarettes, and to look at the locations where these were manufactured. We were able to include also information on BDs and smokeless, I need to suggest, is only from two countries, from Bangladesh and India specifically. So we used a standardized questionnaire, and the question that was used across all countries is as listed here: do you currently smoke tobacco, or in the case of smokeless, do you currently smoke smokeless, use smokeless tobacco on a daily, less than daily, not at all? And so then we were able to define individuals based on the response if they're current users or not. We then looked at the types of products they use, so we could look at the overall prevalence, and the question asked on an average how often would they use a specific product per day, per week, again, so we can look at current use of these different items. standardized question for looking at location of purchase product. Was the last time you purchased manufactured cigarettes for yourself, where did you buy them? And there were 9 options one could use. We standardized the response to the first question because there was a small sample size for those who had reported vending machine, military stores, duty-free stores, outside the country, internet, and from another person. And also the country reports used this collapsed method to describe. But it is interesting, if you look at the country reports, you can see the variation between the countries. Same kind of question was asked for BDs and smokeless use. So for the data analysis, specifically, we used those surveys, those countries that had collected the GAPS information. And so Bangladesh, Brazil, China, Egypt, India, Mexico, Philippines, Poland, Russia, Thailand, Turkey, Ukraine, Uruguay, and Vietnam. The response rates ranged from 65.1 to about 98%. So looking closely at the data, you'll see here this is a percentage of current tobacco smokers. Men are really the population here that are reporting to be current tobacco smokers, because if you look at the comparison, Russia being the country that reported highest proportion of men who smoke, and Poland for women being the country reporting the highest proportion of women who smoke. But you see overall the percentage for women is much lower than that for men, the lowest for men being in Brazil at 21% and the highest for women in Poland at 24%. So really we're capturing an interesting picture here of smokers. When looking at smokeless users, though, we see a little bit of a change. Mind you, fewer countries, have use smokeless products, but those that do, we see that India and Bangladesh being the top 2 countries, women are using these products a lot. When looking again specifically at the various different smoked tobacco products, so this comes from that question where people had a drop-down list and they could select what they smoked out of a list of 9, we find that manufactured cigarettes are the product that's reported the most, followed by hand-rolled cigarettes, then water pipes, and then pipes full of tobacco. Again, looking at manufactured cigarettes, you see that Russia is a country that reports the highest proportion of using this type of product. And it's an interesting, you see the interesting range of use across the different countries. When looking at smokeless products, we see that, again, Bangladesh and India are the 2 countries that roughly 25% use these products. And BDs is also used, a different type of product that is used in these 2 countries, about 10%. Thinking more about where they purchase these products, and this we found to be important because when looking at regulations and sure, stores ask we card in other countries, are you of 21 years of age or not, but other places like kiosks may not be regulated to ask, so we wanted to see where are people buying these products so we could see if an intervention may be necessary. Stores being the most common place for where most people purchase factory manufactured cigarettes. You can see the top 3 countries, Philippines, Bangladesh, and Turkey, are reporting from stores, and even in Brazil, roughly 24% are buying them in stores. Street vendors, not as many, but it's interesting to see what countries are reporting to purchase cigarettes from street vendors, and Vietnam, India, and Russia being the top 3 countries reporting purchase patterns from street vendors. Kiosks, that was interesting to us because we see there's quite a few people in Poland, India, and Ukraine who are buying cigarettes from kiosks. And finally, looking at BD purchase, this is only in India, but again, the pattern is similar, where we're seeing stores are the most common place people are purchasing, followed by kiosks and street vendors. smokeless products showing the same trend in India. So some findings from our summary from what we've just presented is that there are, it seems as though smoking patterns and smokeless use is more common in men in most of these countries that we've surveyed. And the prevalence of smoked products range dramatically, but the products seem to follow a pattern of manufactured cigarettes being the most popular, followed by water pipes, hand-rolled cigarettes, and pipes full of tobacco. Oral smokeless products are more common than nasal smokeless products. Again, the most common purchase locations for both manufactured cigarettes as well as BDs and smokeless products is stores, followed by kiosks, street vendors, and then other locations. And so we're suggesting more research is necessary, and these data are only a glimpse. You can do so much using the other data sets as well that I presented, the other four or five data sets, to look at emerging tobacco products across these countries in different age groups. We need to have more information on tobacco use patterns because it can help us inform tobacco control policy and also how we're doing in terms of meeting the MPOWER and FCTC goals. So our suggestion is to look more at locations of purchase patterns. And there's very few surveys out there other than these surveys in the GATS and maybe the ITC, which has one or two questions. One of the presenters will speak on the ITC in general, but very few places have or surveys have questions looking at locations. So it's a possible next step to look for intervention steps. So monitoring tobacco using these surveys can really help us give us baseline information as to where we are and the impact of policies. And of course, it can help us to determine next steps from a policy and implementation standpoint, and help again in supporting public policy actions and encouraging in social change and norms. If we help people by identifying places where, regulated places that they can purchase tobacco products like stores, and maybe encourage kiosks and vending people who sell tobacco in other places to become stricter in their policies in terms of carding and so on, we can maybe make more of a difference in tobacco control. Thank you very much. This is the website. Yeah. But it's interesting that, a lot of women are using these products as well, and I wonder if it's related to the cost. We didn't, so that's an image there, the wound up cigarette with the leaf. We wanted the next step would be to look at the cost differential, but we are finding that the purchase place where people are buying things in kiosks, if you look at the cost, is a lot less than from a store because the kiosk manager or the vendor can offer discounts and they may not claim it. Yeah.
Because it's just a
smoke. The BD has no filter, so it's like smoking a hand-rolled cigarette, and it's quite harsh, I understand.
Thank you.
Thank you for the question. I think I saw a hand here.
Yeah,
please. Taken this out. Thank you. So if I can maybe restate it, please correct me if I'm wrong, so everyone can hear it. You're discussing the Trans-Pacific Partnership and how the Obama administration has taken out the safe harbor.
It's on fast track. Mm.
Thank you. Do any of our speakers know about this partnership and the Obama administration's response?
Maybe someone in the audience.
Or some... I was just summarizing. This woman up front was telling us about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is negotiations, and part of that is the Safe Harbor Initiative, which my understanding from what you said is Malaysia has initiated this to protect its population from the tobacco industry. Okay, so in the U.S., all tobacco regulations, the tobacco industry can't be sued?
Well, the United States is not being a good player on this.
Okay. Yes, thank you for bringing that up for those of us who didn't attend that session. Thank you.
Yeah, if I got your first question is about simply whether there are alternatives for the farmers, since the areas are the poorest, like I stated. Second question is the momentum of the country. Okay. Yeah, I think I failed to state on the alternatives for tobacco farmers. We have organizations which are coming up with one of the growing of soya beans in those areas, and also the bamboo growing, and they have looked at the advantages of those different those alternatives, and they are viable in those areas. Now the problem is the farmers have been doing the farming for a long period of time, and so there's need to change their attitude and make them understand that this alternative will work for you in the long run. But we have measures put now on this other side. I talk of priorities by the government to give these alternatives. We found the government is not doing much on that. The alternatives are just being given by the lobbies and organization for anti-tobacco use. And so on the side of government, there's less funding on that, and that is one of the key things we found missing in the analysis. On the next question, on the policy, the progress of the policy, on the issues on ground, there are all signs are in place that the government is committed. Because I looked at the Tobacco Control Act of 2007, which is well elaborated on what, according to what the FCTC requires for the countries to do. We were looking at all those articles of the FCTC and what the Tobacco Control Act, what the parliamentarians passed as per the Tobacco Control Act. And challenges for implementing the policy, even with the commitment, are on the stakeholders for implementation. We found that there is no clear structure of the stakeholders and there's conflicting on who should do what, because we find, like for example, you find someone is the Ministry of Public Health, for example, being the focal point in tobacco implementation, and they don't have police powers, for example, to they don't know what to deal with. If you find someone smoking in an undesignated area, there is no clear structure of what you should do with that person because you have no clear police powers to do that. I hope I've answered your question. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, yes, please.
Sure. So the first question is about nicotine cessation in these programs. That's a very good question, and when I go back to look at these papers more, I'm going to try to find out. A number of these reports were made because they were doing a cessation intervention, and so we report on data before the intervention happened. But I don't know how often that was reported in the international data. So that's a question. But we have the papers. We go back and look at the papers. We could find out. I can say that in the U.S., cessation services are available in less than half, like 30 or 40% of addiction treatment programs. So the majority of programs do not provide any type of cessation services. Your second question was about e-cigarettes. Oh, well, everybody's been hearing about e-cigarettes this whole week, and so everybody will have their own opinion. I have mine, too. But to answer your question, and the reason e-cigarettes are getting so much attention here and in research and is that there's being a fast uptake. There's being a big uptake right now for a lot of different reasons. And yes, you know, my son is 17 years old, and he gets popular science, he pulls out the ads, the e-cigarette ads. They look wonderful. They make me want to smoke e-cigarettes. I mean, you know, it's the young 27-something guy leaning on the muscle car and, you know, with the beard and smoking. So they look great. So the danger to youth, I think, I'm off the research grid here. But yes, I think there's a lot of reason for concern.
Thank you. I think I saw a question over here. I'm sorry, of what kind of testing?
Exactly. And the government does not have a lab for testing. So the testing is done by the tobacco companies, and they give the results. And that is what the government assumes is the content for the tobacco.
Thank you. Yes, the question over here again.
Yes, a question for Dr. Yao. Given that in China, the government controls the production, manufacture, sales of tobacco, and is responsible for the healthcare costs incurred,
a great question. Please, I'll repeat it so everyone can hear it. Given that the Chinese government owns the tobacco companies and they're also responsible for all the healthcare expenditures associated with it, how does that influence the changing dynamics of tobacco control?
I think this is a very good question, and this is also always a very controversial topic in China. Like, for government, for one hand, they're responsible for the everything about tobacco, and for the other hand, they're responsible for the healthcare cost of smoking. In my opinion, I think China's government revenue, the tobacco accounts for a large proportion of the government revenue. So in the short run, I think keep the tobacco revenue as a big part of the government revenue. But I think because China ratified the FCTC in 2005, so they made a promise to implement the tobacco control measures. As the healthcare cost increasingly become more and more important, so I think in the future, I think they will put the tobacco control as the first important thing. Yeah. But we hope it will happen soon. Thank you.
I'm sort of curious, while I wait for more questions, how many people in the room have actually used GATS or gone to the GTSS website? Only a few people. For those of you who haven't, I highly encourage you to go look at it. I found it so useful. The data, the summary sheets, really useful. Also, when I was developing my own surveys, I stole some of their questions. So I highly recommend, to those of you who haven't looked, at the Global Adult Tobacco Survey. You can go to the... You can speak to that.
Well, let's just go back up to the one survey. So there's the website, but it's a great resource, as I mentioned, and this new here, the TQS, is specifically designed, 3 to 22 questions specifically designed to measure MPOWER. And so... it's interactive, in meaning you can easily get the data, get the questions, and put them into existing surveys.
Yeah, it's very user-friendly. I did have a question for you, Dr. Kruger. It was interesting to me to see all the different sources of where they buy these manufactured cigarettes, and I'm not sure where else they also purchase smokeless tobacco products there. And it was interesting when you mentioned that the kiosks or can be cheaper sometimes. So I'm just curious, in terms of regulation enforcement, what you see as the next steps in terms of this variety of sources.
Thank you. So I think people heard the question. And, there isn't any way of regulating right now the different locations where people are purchasing these products. So it was inquiry to see, because we know that there is different costs associated for the different products. One of the next steps could be similar to like the alcohol industry, where they do regulate outlets where products are purchased. I mean, that could be something that we consider vending machine or vendors that are selling or kiosks that are selling maybe need to have a permit. So permits could then bring up revenue to help make sure that the costs are all standardized and that money could be used to again help promote. The regulation and adoption. So there's just other new strategies that could be considered or interventions to help promote the reduction of tobacco use. And that's a thought.
Thank you so much. Are there any last questions? Yes. Thank you. Any last? Yes.
I'm not sure I can. when I was speaking about only 30 or 40% of programs provide any tobacco cessation, that was U.S. data. And I don't really know in these 24 countries, I just don't know enough about. And the papers we read, we weren't looking for that information, although some of it may be there. If you're just pointing out this great paradox that we have 70% of 70% of people who are in this addiction treatment is healthcare, so we have 70% of people who come into that healthcare setting are smokers or tobacco users, but mostly smokers, and for the most part we don't treat that. We say our system tends to say you're here for opiates, or you know, you're here for heroin, or you're here for prescription opiates, or you're here for methamphetamine, let's treat that. And the tobacco is sort of, it's kind of like, see no tobacco, hear no tobacco, talk no tobacco. Now, I'm exaggerating, but that has changed a lot in the last 10 years. For example, the VA system does a very good job of addressing tobacco in all of its services. New York State and Oregon and Utah now at a state level have implemented policies to address tobacco in their addiction treatment and sometimes in their behavioral health, their broader behavioral health system. So some on the one hand, there is that paradox. On the other hand, there are some very good efforts that are happening, but we're really only part the way there in terms of addressing, treating tobacco.
Okay. One final question.
Yes, that's right. So there's an estimate that there will be a doubling of the people who are currently uninsured. There will be a doubling of people on Medicaid who will be covered by Medicaid, and a lot of those people are I think probably substance abuse and behavioral health needs are greater in that population than the general population. So there's going to be an increase in behavioral health care provided through the Affordable Care Act. We don't know yet. I mean, I think it's very unclear. Again, this is the U.S. now, but it's very unclear how that's going to affect drug abuse treatment programs. I was talking to one of our very big drug abuse treatment programs in San Francisco just last week, and I said, "What's going to, you know? So what does it look like for you in the ACA starting in January or March?" And they said, "You know, we don't know. We're still waiting for it to shake out." But to answer your question about tobacco, one good thing that has happened is that Medicaid is going to cover tobacco medications, and state by state, it's going to have to decide whether it's going to cover tobacco services. So the main thing is, firstly, I mean, at least if a provider can bill for it, it's more likely that they'll provide the service. But I predict that this problem will not be solved by the ACA alone. Let me put it that way.
Okay, wonderful. I thank you all for joining us at this session. I invite you, if you still have some questions, to come up and talk to us one-on-one. And before you leave, please join me in thanking our wonderful speakers.